All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast Episode 2. Thank you for your long-suffering patience with getting through Episode 1. Tim, how are you doing today, sir?
I'll just go for the generic, I am well, thank you.
You are well, thank you.
Very well.
Okay, I don't know, see, because now you're kind of pulling off a namaste kind of feel. I am well, thank you. So, you know, namaste, namaste. I don't know what that means either. Probably means quite lovely in whatever Hindu. Anyway, okay, so this is the SLS Cast. This is Episode 2. We are your hosts, Matt and Tim, and we're going to be doing our show now. Woo! All right, so we're going to jump right in with some movie news. Movie news. Got any good movie news there, Mr. Man?
Apparently, Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained opens Christmas Day 2012.
Which that was one of mine.
Really?
Yes,
yeah.
I went and like...
Interesting.
I was very excited to try and compete with your movie news knowledge, so I went and started searching some different sites and looking some stuff up, and that was one of the things that I centered on as well, so...
But that's a very interesting movie to open up on Christmas. It's like, oh, hey, family, let's hold off on Christmas, go check out a movie about racism. It'll be delicious.
Absolutely.
Be good, though. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely gonna go. I mean, you know... Well, I think because Christmas Day is actually good, because most of the movie theaters aren't gonna open until around 11 or so. Anyway,
yeah.
Right? So, you'll be able to go and have the wonder of Christmas morning with your children and family and kith and kin and all that good stuff, and have the best Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. So, and then experience all the joy and wonder that is Christmas, and then that's kind of over. I mean, yeah, Christmas Day can linger, whatever, but that's kind of over, so... What better way to kind of close off Christmas than bringing in Django Unchained?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it should be a lot of fun. I mean, I can never go wrong with Quentin Tarantino. I don't think I've really seen... he hasn't directed a movie that I did not like.
Trying to think here. No, I can't. I must agree with you. I can't think of anything. Maybe some things that I've preferred over others. But nothing that I didn't like. All right, what other movie news do you have there for us?
Okay, well, if you remember last week, I was talking about the director Darren Aronofsky, the director of Black Swan, is wanting to make, a dream project of his called Noah. And he wants to play the titular character of Noah is Christian Bale.
That is really an interesting choice.
Whenever I think of, you know, who do I want to play a biblical hero? I mean, I might even put Mel Gibson above Christian Bale.
Ooh, now see, that I could see. Even though most people wouldn't, at this point, go to see him.
Yeah.
That's a good choice. Because in my mind, I mean, because this is what I grew up with, I mean, Charlton Heston kind of cornered the market on biblical characters. And that time period, and people who are fans of Tony Curtis can eat my shorts, I suppose. but it's really hard to picture someone today really nailing a biblical character. I suppose Jim Caviezel, he did Jesus, so I guess he could take a step down and do Noah.
Yeah, it'll probably be a better movie anyway.
Right. Okay, so now that we've offended a whole subset of people, anything else?
Okay, well, this the caption for this article just made me kind of laugh a little bit, because it just shows how little power the U.S. government has in the movie industry.
All right.
And here it is. The Wire creator responds to Attorney General's request for another season of The Wire. Now, the creator tells U.S. government to do their job and back off.
What? Okay. They want him to do another season of The Wire so that they can learn better techniques or something?
I don't know. They just want to do another... I guess they like the show so much that they're publicly saying that they want this guy to do, you know, another season. And basically his response is, you know, do your job. Back off. Don't tell me what to do, government.
Nice. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's something, I guess. It's something in the news realm. I'm going to go right into Dick Tracy news. Now, how old is Warren Beatty right now? He's 70-ish?
Yeah, sure, I'd buy that.
So apparently there's going to be a new Dick Tracy movie. And
wow.
Thank God Madonna died in the first one.
Wow.
Yeah. Because that will be a whole lot of fugly in the second one.
I'll tell you what. And it's interesting, that movie, the sequel to this movie, to Dick Tracy, has been like development hell pretty much since the first one came out. I was not that much of a fan of the first one. And I went and saw it in the movie theater. And I really wasn't that big of a fan of it. I mean, it wasn't like a bad movie or anything, but...
It didn't do well in the box office, did it?
No, it did. Yeah, I mean, it did. Yeah. It did well considering for back then. They didn't have to double their budgets back then to get sequels. They had about $100 million budget, apparently. Just a quick search, so don't hold me to it. But it looks like it did about just short of $163 million.
Oh, wow, that's damn good
for 1990.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So they didn't have to double their budgets back then, and they came out with nearly $63 million ahead. So
I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, I might have to go back and check that out again.
All right. Well, that was all my movie news.
Okay. Well,
slow news
wow.
Week.
That is just really weird. All right. Well, then let's talk about mine. I've also got one that I'd like to save to the end, kind of a thing. We'll start off with a little bit of fun and kind of craziness, a little zaniness here. There is Aaron Spelling of television fame, yes, and dynasty fame and everything like that. He built a house before he died. And his little house was, you know, 57,000 square feet. And he died, and his widow was basically left with the estate. Now, she wanted to downsize, so she started looking into it and started showing the house in 2008, officially put it on in 2009, at a list price of a cool $150 million. And apparently, now the sum has not been disclosed, but as it is reported, the price was firm. So there was no bringing it down. And it has been sold to a 22-year-old chick. 22-year-old frickin' UK heiress to, like, some Formula One racing family has bought this house. And you know what's even more ridiculous? Here's what's more ridiculous. Is that she's not even buying it to live here all the time. It's just so that she can split her time between the UK and the States.
Wow, so it's like her summer home.
And... this is really the most ridiculous part of the whole thing, okay? And maybe it's just relative. Maybe I'm just looking at it from a common sense perspective instead of a relative perspective. But Ms. Spelling, the widow, wanted to downsize, and so she did. She went from 57,000 square feet down to, get this, 15,000. Square feet. So sure, I guess maybe in her eyes, that's, you know, it's like a fourth of what she was living in. Oh my god, 15,000 square feet? 15,000. I'll tell you what, go into your average Staples store, for those of you who have it, or maybe an Office Max or an Office Depot. Your average one of those stores, an average Office Max or an Office Depot, that's about 15,000 square feet. To walk into a store like that and then go, holy crap, a lady downsized to this.
Shit.
Yeah.
Ow.
So, that I thought was kind of fun there, and I thought I would share that with everyone. But, yeah. And, And because, yes, it was a slow movie week, apparently some people who decided to take advantage of it being a slow movie lifetime for them are the group of people from the American Pie movies. There is an American Pie sequel now officially in the works being filmed called American Reunion. This is not a direct DVD. It has nothing to do with the direct with Stifler's brother crap and all that stuff that goes on in the direct DVD stuff. But they are pulling it together, and I'm quite frankly surprised that they got. I mean, I realize that Eugene Levy doesn't really have much going on, so sure he would jump in, and Jason Biggs only has this poor guy. So yeah, I can see why these two guys would want to do it. Sure, but I can't believe they got Allison Hannigan to come back. So maybe it'll be worth watching. Just throwing it out there. At any rate, it's the first time that they've done a movie in 8 years. And apparently they're looking to open it in April of next year. So keep your eyes peeled for that and let the groans set in on that.
It's going to be the same shit where, you know, stuff's going to be going on and Stifler's going to want to pull this prank and screw every chick, you know, available, you know, at possible. It's just kind of sad that...
I know, that's kind of like, I don't know, it for me, it's kind of like watching a train wreck. You don't want to, but you kind of can't pull your eyes away from it, and I think that's what they're going for. I think people are really going to watch this movie out of morbid curiosity.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it's going to be interesting, because I don't know how they're going to market this thing, because I watched those movies when they came out and had a great time with them at the time. The first two were I liked. The third one, meh. I thought it was kind of a nice, sweet way to close it off, so sure, and I thought they were done. But that was 8 years ago. I'm 34 next week. So, I don't know who the heck they're trying to market this movie to, because everybody who watched it 8, 10, 12 years ago is, you know, the people today don't know anything about it, except for maybe some stoner kids or high school kids who had nothing better to do that checked out the direct-to-DVD ones. I don't know. So, that's all I have to say about that. Producer John Davis has mentioned some work that he is doing, and he has let loose with the tongue on the Commando remake.
Oh, yeah. I saw something about that.
So, basically, it was just a little blurb. And he was asked, what's up with Commando? He says, we have a really great script. We have a really great script. You know, I don't know if it really makes sense to call it Commando. Maybe it does or maybe it doesn't. It is the reboot of it and all that stuff. It is David Ayer who did Training Day. He wrote it and wants to direct. It is there and it is a brilliant script. It is just waiting for the right moment for the studio to want to make it and finding the right actor. And then he was asked, do you envision that as a hard R? Davis, yes, definitely. Right now the script that is written is a hard R, end quote. So, I don't know. This is kind of the first I had heard of it. I enjoyed Commando. I thought it was one of the great, you know, just ridiculously over-the-top, violent, silliness that Schwarzenegger did in the 80s. And I don't know, I like it.
Yeah, no, it's a fun movie. It's one of his earlier ones, also, from 84, 85. I think he did it right after Terminator.
Yes, I believe you are correct on that. So, in other light movie news, Natalie Portman gave birth to a baby boy. They have not released a name yet, but hey, congratulations to her. Mazel tov. So, since you were talking about some Black Swan stuff, I thought, you know, I'd tie that in there. There you go.
Ooh, wouldn't that be a trip? She gave birth to a... to a black swan.
Yow.
Ooh, that would be
painful, I would think.
That would be painful. I mean, that would be a trip, really. I mean, especially for the people like watching.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I think that would be crazy. So at any rate, hey, there you go. All right, last but not least, I did get a tweet this morning that I retweeted and put on Facebook and all that good kind of stuff, and it basically has to do with Green Lantern. So, Green Lantern I will talk about first, the fact that everybody is focusing on one thing prior to its release. $300 million.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's everybody is just focused. They're zeroing in on this thing because they're pretty sure it's going to suck.
It could be pretty cool.
It is a computer animated movie that's just got Ryan Reynolds' head floating around in it. It looks terrible from the get-go. I have watched both trailers for it, the silly little one and then the, oh no, this is a serious action movie one, and was not impressed in any way, shape, or form about it. And now they're zeroing in. They're getting full articles on how much this stupid thing costs, because if it does well, then, oh, nobody's going to care. Okay, remember, today a movie has to double its budget. So they are trying to pray that this thing somehow gets $600 million in revenue. No way. There's no way. I do not see this thing getting anywhere close to Pirates or Avatar levels. I'm sorry, I don't see it at all. It doesn't look that good. And the fact that that Warner Brothers is stressing about it, and now people are kind of calling into question the wisdom of spending $300 million and calling in a whole bunch of extra effects companies just to try and finish up the stupid thing on time. You know, it comes down to what Tim Grierson said. Yes, it's all about expectations. If the Reynolds experiment pays off and Green Lantern is huge, nobody will remember how much it costs to make. But if it tanks, we'll be hearing that $300 million figure over and over again the rest of the summer. The studio is offering the film in both 2D and 3D. They're probably praying everybody picks the latter option.
Yeah.
Which leads me to what I tweeted about. My tweet was, and whatever it was, a retweet from Extra Life, so tip of the hat to Extra Life. Uh-oh. And then there is a website link. Well, it's early, so who knows? Followed by what I said, which was, this is absolutely no surprise for me. What's the link, Matt? Oh, what's the link? Well, first of all, you can follow us on Twitter or Facebook and all that good jazz, and you can go find it yourself. But, because I want to get this thing out of there, it's RottenTomatoes.com/Green Lantern. Oh, and what does the tomato meter say? What is it? 29%. Bam, I knew it. I knew this movie was going to suck. I knew it the whole time, and now we have actual people who get paid to tell you that movies are good or bad, and you can't even find 30 out of 100 who will say that this movie is good.
Well, how many people reviewed it? Yeah, it says 16 Rotten and 5 Fresh.
There you go. I'm telling you, man, this movie is not good.
Well, you don't know that until you see it, though. You don't know yet.
Really?
Yeah, because we know critics.
So you think American Reunion is going to be great?
I don't know. I will have to see it. Now, speculating, but I mean, it's like the same thing with this. I mean, if special effects movies are not one person's, you know, cup of tea, then of course they're not going to like it. But I like Martin Campbell, the director, a lot. He's directed many, many fine movies. So I don't know. I'm going to have to give it a shot. I'm going to go see it regardless. So
the sad part is to find out whether or not I am truly vindicated, I have to go pay stupid money to go see this movie as well. And that's the thing, is like I'm really torn because I know this movie's gonna suck, but at the same time, I need to confirm it, and yet I don't want to pay money because then that could help it somehow make a little money and then might inadvertently say that it was good because it was, you know, I don't know. I'm conflicted. I just think this movie's going to suck. And while I was willing to reserve final judgment in the case of Thor, after you had pointed out that Kenneth Branagh directed it, and then I did come back and like it, no. It's not doing anything for me. I'm gonna put myself out there and say it sucks. So, that's movie news. That's all the movie news I have.
That's probably all the movie news we should
ever do.
Ever do. Yeah.
All right, so leading into the next topic, what are we going to do now? Should we talk some movies, or should we do some Three Squared, or...
Three Squared.
All right, 3 Squared. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is the 3 Squared segment time. So, last week, as you all might remember, our 3 Squared segment was, for this week, to give everybody time to think about it, was your favorite villain or villainess. Your favorite actor slash actress, what have you, that has played a villain. And remember, we're looking for 3 examples of their work, so hopefully they've played a villain more than once. And they don't have to have exclusively played villains, but that was what we went with. So, what was your pick, Tim?
Alan Rickman, okay. I think, is a terrific actor. He just played a lot of great characters. Now, the villains I choose for him, the first one is from Die Hard, where he played Hans Gruber. Mainly because I thought he had a terrific death scene at the end. I loved it. Loved that movie. It's just, if I was old enough at the time, I probably would have saw that movie in the theater like 30 times. It was so terrific. the other great villain he played was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He was Sheriff George of Nottingham.
Yes, I totally, and when we initially discussed this, I had totally forgotten about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, he's terrific.
Cut his heart out with a spoon! But why a spoon, cousin? It's dull! It'll hurt more! So, yeah, that was definitely... Sorry, that was a good one. I had totally forgotten about that.
Yeah, and I just love how, like, I love his voice. You know, it's very, you know, like, I don't know. That kind of sounded like James Stewart there for a second. But it's just a very, I think, kind of like iconic villainous sound to it of Alan Rickman's. Now, okay, I don't read the Harry Potter books at all. I just...
Sorry about that. Again, really sorry about that.
I have not read any of the Harry Potter books. I just watched Deathly Hallows Part 1. Now, because some people are going to bitch at me because he's, spoiler alert, apparently not the bad guy, but he alludes to playing the bad guy very well. So, since that probably cannot work as a choice of mine, I am going to go for his character, Antoine Riches, in the film Perfume, The Story of a Murderer, which is about Jean-Baptiste Grenouille, who is... actually, it's about a guy who is born. He's able to create the world's finest perfume because of his scent. Now, what he makes the perfume out of is... he makes it out of women. So he basically kills women to turn them into perfume. Such a terrific film. However, he doesn't play the murderer. He plays the guy who's obsessed with finding the perfect perfume. So that is definitely a movie for all you folks to go check out. It currently.
So is he a bad guy in that movie or not?
Yeah,
no,
yeah, he plays a bad guy. He plays a bad guy. He definitely plays a bad guy.
All right.
Dustin Hoffman is in it as well. The movie currently sits at a 7.5 out of 10 on the IMDb rating, so it's definitely worth checking out. So, yeah, that would be my choices for Alan Rickman.
Okay, well, and excellent choice, as it turned out to be, because I wasn't willing to, I'll be honest, with, you know, obviously we do prep, okay? We don't want you to think, I mean, maybe it's not much, but we do show prep. And we you know, so we do discuss these things ahead of time. And I wasn't willing to let him have Alan Rickman at first, but he brought me on board with it, so gotta give it to him. It was a good choice after all. Good choice, sir. Good choice. My choice for my favorite villain, actor who plays a villain, is John Lithgow. Now, this man just, I don't know, I mean, he plays such great stuff, and people always think of him Third Rock from the Sun, maybe more recently they'll think of him from How I Met Your Mother, where he plays,
Dexter,
you know...
I
can't use Dexter, even though he plays just the most amazing bad guy ever.
Well, surprisingly, now Dexter, a lot of people are associating him with Dexter. Now.
Oh, well, that's even better then, because then they'll back me when they hear this. They're going to be like, oh, well, yeah, of course, you know, I saw Dexter. But see, he was doing this, you know, 40 years ago, And then some people might think of his movie work, and they're like, Harry and the Hendersons? Really? That guy? And I'm going to be like, yes. Yes, that guy. And my movie choices for him are Blowout, where he plays Burke, a hitman. It's amazing. Oh, it's just so creepy. Oh, that was when I was like, I didn't think I could watch him again. Next one would be Ricochet, where he just so over-the-top bad guy. It's hilarious to watch. But at the same time, you know, he follows in my vein of deliciously evil. So I like him there. It's a lot of fun. And finally, I had initially thought about Raising Kane, but then I remembered there was one that was better than that. Cliffhanger. And he is the evil bank robber guy who is able to steal millions of dollars in $50,000 notes. And, I mean, you just gotta be a good bad guy to be able to have a $50,000 bill and know how to spend it. And of course, you know, you also get to see Stallone pretend to act, and that's always fun. And, you know, the movie itself is way over the top. It's, you know, a lot. But it was really good. Definitely was a great summer blockbuster that for 93. So those were my three movies. Definitely got to go with Blowout, got to go with Ricochet, and got to go with Cliffhanger. So, and then, of course, if you're into TV, please watch The Dexter Season 4. He was so, so good.
Just don't start off with season 4.
I don't care. You can start with season 4 if it's, you know, maybe go and read up a little bit so you can kind of get the story up to now. But no, the whole series that whole series is also really good. So yeah, and then you turn around and you think Harry and the Hendersons, you think Third Rock from the Sun, you think more recently with How I Met Your Mother, and you're just like, you can see just the range that this guy has. And yeah, it's awesome. So that was, so there you go. Three squared segment. Woo! There you
Yay.
Go. Real quick, real easy. So for next week, Tim thought of a really good one. And we're going to leave this one pretty wide open because it can be hard to think of it in the context that we're going to say. So we're not going to put any restrictions on this one at all. Your favorite producer. So there you go. Your favorite producer, think of three works that they've done. Please feel free to submit them to us and everything. So we'll be looking forward to that. Do you already know your pick?
Me? I do.
I don't. I'm still thinking. Man, there's a lot out there. And when you think of what goes into producing, and you start thinking of your favorite movies, and then it's like you start realizing they weren't produced by the same people, and you're like, well, man, now you got to go back, and then you got to kind of look and see what they've done, and so this will be interesting for me. I'm looking forward to it. So, very cool. So, ciao. Now we got movies. Should we do movies then?
Let's do it.
Let's do
it. The moment we've been waiting for.
Yes.
What the podcast is truly about.
That is correct. That is correct. The movies. So,
and John Lithgow.
Yeah, and John Lithgow. And apparently, well, crap, I've already forgotten his name. Because he's that good. Who was your three squared guy?
Alan Rickman.
Thankman. Thank you, Alan Rickman. Yes. All right.
Thankman.
Thankman. What? Huh? Yeah. Okay. All right. So, what were our movies? Let's see here. You had to watch Johnny Dangerously. I had to watch HUD. And then the movie we were watching together was the movie you had recommended, The Nude Bomb.
It was the Academy Award-winning Nude Bomb.
Yes. It was the only time they ever gave an Academy Award for a movie being so bad that they would never have to see it again. The award goes to. So, well, what do you want to start with? You want to start with Nude Mom? Let's get that. Let's get the bomb out of the way.
Yeah, let's get the bomb out of the way.
All right. Lead off. Go ahead.
Where to begin? I think, a good place to begin is when I knew the movie was going to be total shit was the opening titles. How can a movie be rated PG with the name called, you know, The Nude Bomb? And basically the entire title was just a playoff on how ridiculous the name is. And in part, that was just retarded. it was bad. I mean, okay, I'll start off with some good things about the film itself. is that what I liked about it was that it kept true to the original TV series, as in the look of it, and kind of the atmosphere of it stayed true with it. Now, the problem with it is that they try to take a lot of the jokes from the original TV series, which were pretty harmless and not really raunchy, I suppose, but then they incorporated raunchiness in it that to me did not work whatsoever. Like, they were talking about panties and a lot of, like, sexual references and just a lot of really raunchy stuff in it. And with that in the mixture of the stupidity of the physical comedy that did not work, it just really didn't really go for me. I mean, I enjoyed some of the comedy. Everybody had a phone. Like, everybody had a phone in the stapler. There was, like, a phone in the jock strap, you know, but just don't make sure you call more than once or something like that. You know, just Right. Stuff like that was kind of funny, but...
And everything is a phone except the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Everything was a phone except the phone. Like, the stapler was a phone, and, you know, it was just... I mean, there was a lot of kind of funny stuff. I mean, one moment in the film that that stands out in general that I thought was pretty funny was when they're sitting around and they're like, okay, well, we're talking about highly, you know, we're talking about very important things. We need to go into the cone of silence. Well, when the cone of silence falls onto everybody, well, nobody can hear each other because
the... Well, yeah, the best part about that scene, though, with the cone of silence was the editing, because they're sitting there, and that was one of the three funny parts of that movie for me. That let me rephrase that, were intentionally funny. Anything else that I may have laughed at was pretty much, you know, oh my god, I can't believe I'm watching this. Terrible. So, there were three intentionally funny parts, and that was one of them. Because, you know, like, the guy from the United Kingdom starts trying to write something down, and not only can they not hear him writing and moving the paper and stuff, but then when he puts the sign up against the glass, they can't even read it. Which was pretty funny. And then so he moves the paper out from the cone of silence, and then you can immediately hear it being waved around and going from hand to hand until they move it back into the... And then you can't hear it anymore.
Yeah.
And then they dropped it down and they do it again. You know, so that I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, if they just had more stuff like that throughout the movie, it could have been great. I mean, they had so many, like, gags that had potential to be great. I mean, the one big thing that really annoyed me, other than the car desk thing, and that was pretty stupid, was was to get into the evil lair, it was a giant zipper. You know, what could be on the other side of the zipper? And they're like, oh, well, I don't know. Who knows what'll pop out from there or something like that. It was just, you know, stupid. Very stupid.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Stupid.
And so I guess you're summing it up with stupid. Did you have anything else you'd like to add?
It was just stupid.
Okay, very cool. So, let me talk about this movie. I thought that this movie, with the amount of overdubbing that was done, I thought it was an animated movie. I really did. It seems like they just decided to do anything and everything they could to try and make it funnier, which, you know, just kind of digging a hole, really. So, they were, like, adding dialogue. You know, somebody's walking, and they obviously never said it, but then they, you know, oh, we gotta go catch this tram. But there's people in the tram. But that doesn't matter. They're not paying for this stuff. You know, whatever. I don't know. They have, like, whole little conversations, and nobody's talking the whole time while they're walking to this tram. I mean, it was ridiculous, the amount of overdubbing that they did.
Yeah.
I think that Hollywood watched this movie, and then, at that point, created a job called the continuity expert. Because you have scenes where someone is wearing something and then not wearing the same thing, and then they would pan away and come back to them, and they're not wearing the same thing, or they are holding something in their hand and then come back and they're not holding it in their hand. Little pertinent things, like at the beginning of the movie when he's supposedly talking on the phone, he's on his little shoe phone as he's parachuting down, but then they do the cutaway shot and he's still talking overdub, but he's not holding a phone. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
Little things like that, or, you know, people are wet, and or people are dry in one scene when they're supposed to be dry, and then wet in the next scene before they've gotten into the water, and then they get in the water, or the stunt double literally grabbing his nose and plugging it and holding it like you do when you're about to dunk yourself in the water. Yeah, that was, like, hilarious. Not intentionally funny. And I laughed my butt off at that.
I also loved it whenever at the end when they're doing the whole cloning thing, going through the cloning machine.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you can tell that they just have 20 different people playing each character.
Oh, but the best part of that, though, the best part of that was they, aside from, yes, that some they just did some basically very cheesy attempts at some makeup that would be passable from the wide shot, and it wasn't. You could still tell that these were other people, you know. But the best part of that was when they initially started the clone fight, and the villain dude walks through, and you know now he's aiming around and trying to shoot, and they did a good job of doing the double cut so that the two guys were standing next to each other and it was the same guy. For whatever reason, I don't know, for budget reasons, or they just thought, oh, yeah, sure, no, it'll work, really. They'll never know. And they tried the old Ed Wood trick of just cutting off the dude's face at the nose by having him stand in front of stuff. And Maxwell Smart's double when he goes through his doppelganger, and they're actually shooting. So you see Maxwell Smart, but then you see the stunt double or whatever guy trying to play his double, and you can completely tell it's not him. Yeah, I mean, you can totally tell that they just, couldn't afford the editing or couldn't afford to do the special effects or something, and they actually have someone else standing. He's a little bit taller. His hair's not the same color. It's, you could completely tell it's not him. And he happens to be conveniently standing behind a desk module or something that just cuts him off to the nose.
Yeah.
So you can only see the bridge of his nose and his eyes, and you can still tell it's not him. And then Smart walks, and then the other guy walks, and so then you see his whole face, and it was terrible. So,
well, at least Don Adams had pretty good energy throughout the movie. I mean, I enjoyed Don Adams for whatever, it was worth, I guess.
Well, yeah, and again, like I said, three scenes that were intentionally funny to me. The first one, obviously, Kona Silence thing. Second one was when the fashion designer is dying, and he keeps having Agent 22 call the morgue. No, call the ambulance. And without breaking a sweat, she hangs up the phone, picks up, and starts dialing somebody else. And while the phone is supposedly ringing, she's not got it to her ear. And then the guy says something, and it's gonna. And then, call the morgue. What's your hurry? Call an ambulance. So that was funny. I really did laugh at that. I thought that was really good. And then eventually the end of that scene, the payoff is Morgan. They actually finally just ask the guy, So Smart says, okay, "Well, what do you want, Morgan or ambulance?" And he goes, "Ambulance." And so they get an ambulance, take him to the hospital. They get him to the hospital, and so they have to talk to him, and the doctor won't let him in. So Don Adams, he's like, Agent 22 tries to, say, "Here, let me talk to the doctor." He says to her, "No, I know what I'm doing here." And he's like, "You need to let us in right now. It's a matter of national security." And the doctor says, "No." And then she just turns around, Agent 22, so goes, "Please?" And he says, "Sure." And then Don Adams turns around and he says, "See, I told you I could get us in." And I thought that was really funny. So, beyond that, those were the only three things. But yeah, the movie was terrible. Everybody admitted it was terrible. And so what they did was they just removed it. They non-canonized it. They took it out of the canon of the Get Smart world. And sometime later, they did a TV movie called Get Smart Again, which brought back everybody who was still alive from the original series in their original roles. And that one did so well, it actually brought back, there was a new Get Smart television series.
Yeah.
That only lasted for one season, unfortunately. But I was just glad to see that they did redeem themselves. So.
Yeah, I wonder if it's that's available on Netflix, Get Smart Again.
It is.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
So there you go. So that was the nude bomb, and it was a bomb, let me tell you. So, At any rate, okay, well then why don't we go ahead and have you talk about Johnny Dangerously, sir.
Okay, well, Johnny Dangerously is a film with Michael Keaton. It came out, like 83, 84, early 80s?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a fan of Michael Keaton. Even now I'm a pretty big fan of Michael Keaton. I loved him in Beetlejuice, he was in Gung Ho, Multiplicity. Even in the movie, I think it's called My Life, with him and Nicole Kidman, about when he's...
Yeah.
He's dying of some kind of terminal illness. Mm-hmm. But he... He just has, like, this comedic timing that I just really dig. And I really enjoy. And he just has a personality that people can relate to, that, you know, people can just sit down and put on a movie with Michael Keaton and just kind of kick back and enjoy it. Now, Johnny Dangerously, I enjoyed it for the most part, and then was I just got tired of it pretty quick. It started off pretty funny. When it first starts off, you think it's like it almost seemed like a Naked Gun type of movie, where you have being a movie about the 1920s set during the Prohibition, gangsters and whatnot, but it seems like it's a spoof. Okay, well, the movie starts off. It starts off, you know, thinking it's a spoof. Well, then as it goes on, it never takes really a serious tone to it whatsoever. But it, in a way, it kind of starts taking the plot line seriously, in a way. Like, an actual plot line develops and all this stuff develops. But then the madcap comedy, the really, really madcap stuff, just stops completely within half an hour into it. Sometime before Peter Boyle character dies, it just completely stops. So then you're kind of left with a regular comedy that to me really wasn't funny. Now, the one character in it that I thought was funny throughout was Joe Piscopo, because he had such lines that were gems, like, you know, well, what was it like? Oh,
hang me on the door, Johnny.
Yeah, yeah, that or like I've only been, my mother once. Hit me in the face once.
Just once.
Once. Yeah, just or, you know, I've only been shot at once. Just once. You know, just it was just funny, and he kind of reminded me of a Jerry Lewis type of character in a way, like Jerry Lewis playing a serious comedic role. And the movie itself was fun to look at. I mean, it had, the colors were cool, the look of it was neat, the storyline was kind of generic, but I think what saved it for me was the little bits of pieces of comedy that were really good and that actually worked out, but they were not really laugh-out-loud funny. You know, just kind of like, oh, that was kind of funny, that was kind of a good play on the genre, that was a good play on the time period, you know, playing around with Prohibition and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of what I thought of it. It was just, I mean, it was an alright movie that could have been so, so, so much more. But I thought Michael Keaton and Joe Piscopo both did a terrific job.
Alright, well, I guess, you know, I don't know, I really enjoy the movie. It is one of my favorite movies. I think it's funny throughout. You know, the plays on the twists and the plays on every single thing that they did, from making fun, you know, from getting away with all the cursing in the movie for it being PG-13 by poking fun of it, because the guy who is the complete potty mouth is foreign, so he doesn't say, you know, it's not
Fargan.
Asshole, it's Fargan Icehole. And, you know, I'm standing here holding my dork in my hand, you know. You know, and it was, you know, the handle, obviously, of the toilet. But, you know, that kind of stuff. Or like, you know, when you say that as the movie becomes kind of, it stops being a spoof. There you go, yeah.
Spoof.
Kind of parody spoof film. That stops being a spoof and just tries to become a normal comedy. I don't see that. You know, I look at the gags from the aspect of it being a complete slapstick comedy and not a spoof. It was not, you know, where you see it as it was trying to spoof something or be a parody, I look at it as just a complete slapstick comedy from start to finish. And where they do things like the fireworks scene, and they're in the office, and the fireworks start going on, you know, and it's like, oh man, Johnny must be getting lucky again. You know, these are just, you know, because apparently everybody in the world knows that the only time fireworks go off is when Johnny's getting lucky. You know, or when they kill, Danny DeVito in the bar, and they
with
the Schlitz malt liquor bowl. I mean, that was priceless. And again, these are things that happen after where you felt that it stopped being, you know, quote spoof, and kind of was just trying to be a comedy. And you know, and yeah, there was some parts where I think it did try to take itself a little too seriously. But even in that, they would then take that seriousness and turn it on its ear. Like, you get to the penultimate scene where, you know, Johnny's got to get out of jail, and they play the telephone game down the line, you know, the mess line. They're all eating chow, and you know, Johnny's got to, you know, whatever. Somebody's going to kill what's her face.
Yeah, and they
get all the way down to the end, and he's like, wait, what do you mean? I got to get to this place, and they're in danger or whatever? And he's like, that's not what I said. I'm good at this game. You know, so, you know, and then, like, and even then, the escape. You know, they're driving and they keep peeling away the layers of paint, you know, and it's really just, you know, more contact paper, and they keep pulling it away, and it was black, and it was, like, white or whatever, and then, you know, it's different patterns, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like baby ducks and stuff, and she's like, well, you know, I was thinking maybe down the road, and, you know, all that kind of stuff that happens throughout the entire movie really kept it light and fun for me the entire time. And, you know, like, even back where Johnny's, you know, talking about, you know, does any other, what is it, does any other gang offer, like, dental and stuff like that? You know, stuff like that. You know, those Japanese gangs, they're going to get out there and they're going to work harder and they're making it cheaper, and we got to compete with that, you know. So there was a lot of fun and a lot of stuff that was topical to the day that they brought into the movie. And I just thought it was I look at it as a slapstick comedy throughout. Instead of trying to be a spoof that is not a spoof entirely, which I could see why you would then... Well, that would take points away, because you're feeling a little misled. The movie seems to you to set up one way, but then turn into something else. And sure, and that's so. It's kind of like when someone, you know, hey, you ask the waiter for a Coke, and they bring you a Dr. Pepper. You know, so you're expecting Coke when you drink it, and you know, it's different. But for me, I never looked at it in that vein, and always just enjoyed it. Straight across.
Well, with me, I ordered Coke and I got sour Dr. Pepper. I mean, like, you know, like I said, I mean, I don't want to, I mean, I know a lot of, I mean, I've, because I went back and did research and looked up, you know, what other people say about the movie, and a lot of people love the movie. I just really couldn't, you know, like, I got into the movie, you know, not how I, you know, not for the reasons why I should have gotten into the movie.
So it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either.
Exactly. Yeah, like, I gave it half. You know, half, you know, about 50-50. That's what I say. It was 50% I enjoyed, and the other 50% I had a problem with.
All right. And that's okay. It's not like Siskel and Ebert agreed all the time either. So, you know. Sometimes Siskel gave it a thumbs up, and Ebert gave it a thumbs down, and vice versa. So, all right. So I still love it. you thought it was okay. So I can live with that. I can live with that. Okay. I can live with that. So... Then HUD. So I liked HUD. I watched HUD. Everything that was wrong with Stone from last week, for those who were listening, was right with HUD. Okay, this was a movie that was tailor-made for someone who was trying to make a movie like Stone. This movie was well-crafted. It's a very simple story, but the subtleties of the story, of watching particular characters grow, change, and certain characters stay the same, was amazing. This movie is basically, I think it was the first time that Paul Newman was nominated for Best Actor. He didn't win it. He says poor man got robbed so many times, it's unbelievable. He did eventually win one, but he was nominated like 9 times over the course of his career, only won once. For The Color of Money. But at any rate, so this is a movie, it takes place in Texas back in the very early 60s, and it follows a cattle ranching family as they deal with a potentially devastating malady that has afflicted their cattle, which is called foot and mouth disease, or hoof and mouth disease, depending on where you are and who you talk to. It's very difficult to control, and there have been very few outbreaks of it in the United States, but when there have been, they have been devastating. The last really, truly terrible one was like in 1929 or 1919 or something like that, and literally hundreds of thousands of cattle were killed, sheep, goats, 22,000 deer, that all had to be put down. And you cannot eat this meat, it's not safe for consumption. So that's the other side of it. So at any rate, so they're having to deal with potentially having this problem, while Paul Newman's character Hud is, you know, and during this whole thing, you know, Hud is basically just this selfish, arrogant bastard. I mean, that's what he is. He's a selfish, arrogant bastard who refuses to acknowledge his own failings and believes that the world is how he sees it. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks or says. How he sees the world is how the world is. And so he's just going to live life by his own rules. And his father is always disappointed with him, but still treats him like a son. He still keeps him in the business. He still, you know, but he, it's obvious he doesn't like him. And he has no respect for his son. His son has no respect for, you know, Hud has no respect for his dad. By the way, the guy who played his dad, Melvin Douglas, he deserved winning his Best Supporting Actor Award for this. He was ridiculously amazing.
As well as Patricia Neal, she did terrific.
Yes, and she Patricia Neal was also in it, and she got a Best Actress out of that. So,
yep.
I mean, it was just a really, really, really good movie. At any rate, but the dynamic character, the dynamic character was Brandon DeWilde. He plays the nephew Lonnie. Lonnie is without a father, actually, because Hud got drunk with Lonnie's dad. Lonnie was still just a baby at this time, and Hud was only 17 at the time. So, but Hud was driving, crashes the car. He walks away without a scratch, but his brother dies. So he thinks that's why his dad doesn't like him. But there's actually some other. There's a very powerful scene that exposes the real reason. So if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. And I don't want to give it completely away. And Lonnie is actually truly the dynamic character of this film, and it's really fun to watch him, you know, as he struggles with his identity between Hud, because of Hud's age. Hud's 34 in the movie. He says, you know, I'm 30, all my 34 years, you know, whatever. So Hud's 34 and Lonnie is 17 at the time of the movie taking place. So Lonnie's trying to having to choose what path in life he's going to take. Is he going to, you know, he looks at the example his grandfather sets, and he looks at the example that Hud sets, and he has to kind of choose. And in the mix is Patricia Neal. She is the housekeeper, and it's kind of interesting to watch the dynamic of Patricia Neal's character between Hud and Lonnie. It's small, and there was a book called Horsemen Pass By, and that's what Hud is based on. And apparently in the book, Patricia Neal's character is greatly expanded, so it's actually pretty interesting. I might have to read that book to see what they did. She was also black.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, interesting way that, I don't know, maybe we need to go back in time and transport some screenplay writers from then to now so that they can learn how to adapt books to movies. I don't know. But at any rate, they the dynamic character is actually Lonnie, even though the movie is called HUD. And it's really the relationship and the story of the relationships that develop and change and sometimes don't change between father and son and men and boys coming of age. So the movie is just fantastic, well written, well directed, well acted all the way around, and beautiful ending to the movie. Great. I'm sorry you didn't enjoy Johnny Dangerously as much as I did, but I gotta say, I really enjoyed Hutt, so good call.
Well, good. No, I'm glad you liked it. Do you know the reason why Paul Newman chose to be to do that movie?
Not a clue.
Apparently, because he was nominated for Academy Awards twice before HUD. One in 1962 for The Hustler, which was the part one of, Color of Money, I guess.
Right.
In 1959 for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Well, apparently the censorship, the MPA... Oh, no, sorry, the MPA wasn't established at the time. But the censorship was all over the ass of the filmmakers for The Hustler and Cat on the Haunted Roof to bring down, language and bring down the content. So, in the 60s, Paul Newman was looking for a movie to stir up, kind of the adult content and to stir up the reception of audiences. So he found HUD. And which HUD apparently is the first movie to feature at least a scene that alludes to a rape. And of course, that's not why he didn't say, oh, this movie kind of has a rape scene and I want to do it. He didn't do that. But it's just how they handled, the start of that one particular scene with the character of HUD and Alma, when he's about to rape her. And then also whenever she's leaving to get on the bus at the end of the movie and they have that closing conversation between the two of them, where he actually for pretty much ever apologizes throughout the entire movie is when he says I'm sorry to her. And that's the only time you actually ever see HUD, kind of retract anything he's done, even when his father dies. Oh, spoiler alert. It's a very interesting character, and I just love how, kind of how they just wrap things up at the end and how everything kind of ended. How everything turned out to be, I suppose. It was just terrific. I loved it. So I'm totally psyched that you liked it.
Outstanding. So now you know. There you go. Everybody knows all about Nude Bomb and HUD and Johnny Dangerously. So hopefully you'll check out those movies. Well, not Nude Bomb. We would like to save you from having to watch that. But hopefully you'll check out HUD and Johnny Dangerously and form your own opinions. Tell us whether or not you agree with our assessments on, or if maybe you find Johnny Dangerously more my flavor or you find it more Tim's flavor. I'd love to hear about it. Same for HUD. Hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as we did. Moving on, then, we have a classic movie recommendation, which we forgot to do last week. Sorry about that. But classic movie recommendation for this week is going to be The Quiet Man. John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara. Beautiful movie. Awesome story of a bare-knuckle boxer who moves back to his hometown to kind of rediscover himself. And in the process, finds way more than he ever bargained for. So please go check that out if you haven't seen it. It is just a beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. Well done movie. Especially the end. Love the end. So, let's see. What else do we have left? Not much. I think we got to talk about Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
The second episode was One for the Angels. It was starring Ed Wynn as Lou Bookman. It's so wonderful to see you, Mary Poppins. Oh, so that's right. That's Ed Wynn. For those who don't know him off of his name, you'll definitely recognize how he looks and everything. So you get to basically, it's a real simple story. Death Comes for Lou Bookman. He arranges one extra sale because he's a salesman, but he doesn't realize the price that he's going to have to pay for getting his time to make an extra sale. And again, kind of it's not really a twist ending or a surprise ending, but I don't want to say really too much more than that, other than it's just fabulously well written and very well acted, especially when the final pitch happens, when the final sales pitch happens. So what do you think, Tim?
You know, I'm just going to spoiler alert. I mean, just fast forward the section if you don't want to hear what happens in the episode. But basically, the little girl from the very beginning of the episode, who, you know, just has this bonding friendship with Edwin's character, actually Death ends up, you know, is going to take her life over Edwin's life. And at the end, Edwin's character has to make this pitch so that Death doesn't take the girl's life, but instead takes his life instead. And it's just, I mean, it just kind of, I mean, it got pretty sentimental and very, you know, very sweet. And something that I'm really, you know, expecting, especially out of, you know, a Twilight Zone show. And especially with the show that came out, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s, where it actually deals with death and children and, you know, death of a child and somebody taking, you know, a child's life. And it's just, you know, very interesting. You know, it's just a fun, you know, it's just something fun to discover. You know, it's just really cool.
I agree. And that was what I was alluding to, since we have already officially announced spoiler alert, was you see how Death is being convinced of the sale that Edwin is making, you know, the pitch. Oh, you've got to have this, and, you know, no one would ever be complete without him, you know, and you see him struggling with it. And you almost get the feeling that while, you know, while he is legitimately distracted, I got the feeling that Death was kind of putting on some airs of, you know, really struggling to buy it, to whether or not he's buying. Not to make Bookman feel better, but to really stress kind of more along the lines, do I need to, you know, should I let this guy be talking to me right now? Should I go take care of what I need to take care of? Because again, I believe he was truly distracted, but the level with which the confusion on his face gets shown and everything, and how you see him really trying to struggle with whether or not to buy it, I think was a little put on. And I think that was done intentionally because, you know, again, not to make Bookman feel bad, but kind of to describe the internal conflict within Death. Maybe sometimes he doesn't find taking the life of a child tasteful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was what I really liked about that episode. That was probably my favorite part, was watching that scene and making him late for his appointment. Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I mean, we still have to tell each other what to watch next week.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, well, I have chosen a movie that I enjoyed from my teenage years that, for me, has aged well. I still enjoy it to this day. The movie called The Crow, Brandon Lee's final movie. I'm very anxious to hear what you have to say about it.
So it should be pretty cool. I'm excited.
I'm hoping that you like it, because I don't want to keep you know, recommending movies to you and then you come back and go, no, they weren't. It wasn't my cup of tea. I'm hoping not to see that. So, anyway, all right. So, what was your movie that you recommended to me?
Black Death. I actually saw it at a movie theater here at the River Oaks here last month, I suppose. They had a midnight showing of it, and it's a terrific movie. It's with Sean Bean. You probably will recognize him from Lord of the Rings. He was Boromir, and he is recently seen in The Game of Thrones. It kind of surprised me in a way. The film did surprise me. So yeah, so that would be my movie to recommend to you.
Outstanding. And then our movie to watch together is going to be John Travolta's attempt at spy movie making, From Paris with Love. So hopefully that movie will not be as bad as Stone or The Nude Bomb, because I would really like to watch a good movie and talk about a good movie for a change. So, that is it. All right. So, unless we have anything else to add...
I believe that is it, sir.
Okay, well then please remember to catch us at slscast.com. You can always follow us on Twitter at the SLScast. You can contact us via email at theslscast@gmail.com. Facebook page is up officially. Not a whole lot going on there yet, but we're still working on adding content to it, so you can still check it out and like it if you... feeling generous. And as always, thank you to our music partners, Cries of Solace. The music that you've been listening to in the background is provided by them, and they are definitely awesome. Check them out at myspace.com/cries of solace, facebook.com/cries of solace. And also, just a quick note, looks like we are going to be getting some logo artwork and stuff like that to make the site look better, to make everything go better, and that's going to be provided to us from Kega Creative Group. So they are definitely going to be hooking us up, and it's going to look badass. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. We will catch you guys next week.
Alrighty. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.